Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
With chaos in Albany and both parties claiming control of the New York State Senate, Governor David Paterson is our first guest today. We'll also talk about an important new economic initiative of his that made it to the cover of the Daily News on Monday, but has gotten lost in the shuffle since, headlines about shame and with clown faces and stuff since the coup began on Monday afternoon, taking over from the issues. Governor Paterson, good morning. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you.
The Senate Democrats have just gone to court. In your opinion, who should legitimately be running the Senate now?
Well, Brian, regardless of who were to win in a court battle over what happened on Monday, the real question is, how many senators are supporting each candidate? So in other words, even if you won the court battle, as soon as you go back into session, if you don't have the votes, somebody could call for a vote and you lose.
Well, it depends on what basis they win the court fight. I mean, you used to be minority leader. You were elected to that position in the Senate. So do you reject the Democrats' claim that the majority is elected for a two-year term and so may not be voted out of power for 2 years, as happened this week?
Well, power has been changed in legislative bodies for centuries. As a matter of fact, just a few years ago, the United States Senate changed leadership right in the middle of the session when the senator from Vermont became an independent. And so I think that if that's the issue that they're going to court on, clearly a vote of the House that, you know, there are now more members of one party than the other, because special elections can also change that and have in the history of this country, I think that's well-heeled law.
So you're not taking your own side's side in this fight, it sounds
like.
Well,
I'm taking my own side's side in that I think that more Democrats voted for more people voted for the Democratic Party last November. And in January, the Democrats took the majority. And ethically, I think that when you vote somebody in as leader, you don't vote them in as leader on a whim, and every 2 weeks you make an assessment of whether or not you like what kind of job they're doing.
And the way that this came about is that two of those elected Democrats decided to defect this week and vote with the Republicans for a Republican majority leader. They are Hira Montserrat and Pedro Espada. There have been reports that Senator Montserrat is back on the fence. Are you actively trying to woo Montserrat back to the Democratic fold?
Well, Senator Montserrat called me and asked my advice, and I don't want to go into our private conversation, but I think it's clear that as a leader of the Democratic Party, I would advocate that people who are elected by the Democratic Party should stay in that party. No, when people get on the floor, they have to vote their consciences. But in terms of which party they're supporting for leadership in a body, I think it's misleading to the public. You ran as a Democrat, I think it's disloyal.
It's still a mystery to me why these two Democratic senators decided to defect to the Republicans. Did the billionaire in revolt, Tom Golisano, buy them off in some way? Do you know?
Well, I don't know. It's a mystery to me. I mean, I heard that that they didn't like the rules of the Senate, in other words, the rules by which the Senate is conducted. That's very curious. And certainly, this is the last 2 weeks of session. So this is the time when you would think there would be the least campaigning. That's for the fall. And you wouldn't think there'd be any elections. That's for November. And the election for leadership of the body was held in January. So I have no idea why they would want to change the leadership. And Mr. Golisano came right out after the the incident and took credit for it and talked about this new organization that they have and you know, sort of was kind of saying that if they didn't follow whatever it was that, that this new organization wanted, that there'd be another change in the Senate. And this is not the way to conduct government. And last I checked, Mr. Golisano's not elected to anything. So, you know, I thought it was an improper intervention.
He's not even a resident of New York State if he followed through on his threat because he didn't like the new tax rates. He was gonna move his residency to Florida.
Well, he said he was moving to Florida, and I understand what he's saying in the sense that the personal income tax on the wealthy was high, and it does drive job creators out of the state, and it may cause us to lose jobs. But we had a $4 billion hole in our deficit, Brian, but we reduced $20.1 billion between February and June. That is higher than any four reductions, if you add them together, in the history of the state. That is how miserable the state's finances are. Much of it is caused by the national recession. A lot of it is caused by New York's overspending.
And I don't want to get into that old debate about that legislation that passed, and my guest is Governor Patterson, in our limited time. But some people are blaming you in part for this coup, saying it's another example of your failure to consolidate power as governor, that if you were more feared and more powerful, it would have been harder for this to happen. Do you accept that?
Not at all, Brian. The Senate leadership has been in question from the minute that the November elections ended last year. These three of the senators said they were not going to vote for a member of their own party. Oddly enough, Mr. Montserrat was originally one of the four, but not one of the continuing three. And regardless of who was governor or who was majority leader, those three individuals, from the day after the election, announced that they were not supporting the leader of their own party, Malcolm Smith, to be the majority leader. I don't think it would have mattered who was governor. This is an ethical question for the individuals involved. And the fear that they are describing is exactly what the reforms that they are advocating is supposed to stop. In other words, a governor who has more power than he or she deserves. So, for instance, even in the establishment of our ethics commission, the governor had the majority of the appointments, and that may have led to some poor judgment on the part of that commission. So we're actually trying to reduce powers of the governor and not have people feared as much as they're respected and not get laws passed by clout but by persuasion.
One reporter told me last night that Pedro Espada may have done this somewhat to protect New York City landlords, that he didn't like the rent stabilization bill that was making progress on vacancy decontrol, that would keep more apartments in rent stabilization when tenants move out. Do you have any evidence that landlord power or Espada's alliance with landlords is a centerpiece here?
I don't have any evidence, but what I would say is that when you manipulate the system to change power in the last 2 weeks of session, when these very important issues are being addressed, you open the door to a perception on a wide variety of issues as to why this might have been done. And the whole process looks very sinister to me.
But are you saying that landlord power is in this, is somewhere in the mix here?
Well, Brian, I have no idea why Mr. Espada took the actions that he took. And I have no idea what – it did not seem to me as much as of an issue-oriented procedure as much as a power grab where people put personal interests above the people's interests.
Did you read the Times article today about the how the Latino-Black rivalry in Albany helped fuel this takeover, they say? It quoted Assemblyman Peter Rivera of the Bronx saying if you were to poll Latino Democrats in the legislature, you'd get a rah-rah response because Black lawmakers have dominated the coalition and that they are angry at you for not appointing a Latino to Hillary Clinton's Senate seat. What's your reaction to that?
I didn't get that impression at the time. The the two outstanding choices that could have been made from the Latino community are Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez, who took herself out of the running, and the borough president of the Bronx, who became took a position in Washington with President Obama. And that didn't leave anyone with what I thought would have been the standing to serve as United States Senator. And I honestly don't remember that ever being mentioned in the selection process.
And the larger question of this Black-Latino rivalry and feeling like they were the junior partners, so if they had a chance to oust Malcolm Smith, who's Black, and rise Pedro Espada into the Senate president position, you think that's a factor?
I think that the fact that there is an African-American president and an African-American governor and an African-American majority leader, and we have never had a city or statewide Hispanic leader, has not gone unnoticed in that community. And for my part, I appointed Luis Gonzalez, the first presiding judge of the first department in the history of the state, and also suggested Sonia Sotomayor when I gave her the Woman of the Year Award in March in Albany. She accepted the award, and I said that if they're ever looking for Supreme Court justice, I think she would be a great candidate. And I said that because I do think that the level of service in the Hispanic community does not equal the intellectual capacity of people who live there. But I did not get that this became a factor in that particular race. And what's happening, Brian, is you can keep asking me the different reasons why this may have happened, but the overall reason that it did happen is somebody disrespected the legislative process, and somebody decided that we shouldn't be doing the people's business in the last 2 weeks of session. We should be doing politics, when for the whole session, New Yorkers have been coming of all persuasions and of all colors to Albany to try to tell us what they think the laws are that need to be passed right now. And we can't even do it because we're having a fight about politics. And I think it's a total disgrace.
But, you know, Republican Senator Marty Golden of Brooklyn was here yesterday, and he said this is about the issues for him. This is about taxes. This is about Rockefeller drug laws and other things. When you were minority leader, if you suddenly had the chance to gain control of the majority with some defecting Republicans just before the big issues were coming to a vote, equivalent to now, wouldn't you have seized the opportunity at that time?
No.
Really?
No.
Why not?
As a matter of fact, Brian, and I'm sorry, this we don't have a polygraph here. I never asked a member of the other party to switch parties.
Why not?
I've never had a discussion on that subject.
Why not? Maybe you weren't aggressive enough.
Well, I got to be governor.
Right. We won't talk about how.
But listen, the whole thing, Brian, is at the end of the day, the people, when you lose sight of who your employer is, when you lose sight of your own personal ethics, what else is there? You know, when you do that, everything else is a piece of cake. Then the system becomes corrupt. The people elected you. They elected you based on issues that you stood for at the actual time. I don't think manipulating the process is the way to try to cede power. When I became the minority leader, the first thing that happened is that one of the legislators defected to the Republican side. I beat her and beat six others to help the Democrats take the majority. I think it was a legitimate way. Now, once in a while, there may be a person who legitimately changes their viewpoint. Maybe the constituency within their district changes and they want to change parties. I could respect that. But these individuals didn't even change party, Brian. They voted for a new leader, presumably, on all these issues. And Mr. Golden, who you had on yesterday, called for the resignation of Senator Hiram Montserrat because of his indictment for an assault offense, said that he should actually be expelled from the Senate, and then accepted his vote to make his party the majority. Now, what kind of ethics is that? And then when he turned around and was asked about it the other day, he said that's actually reform.
Yes, he said the issues take precedence for him over Montserrat's personal ethics.
So in other words, the end justifies the means. That's a great way to run government.
Governor Patterson, my guest on WNYC. Okay, you gave a major economic development speech on Monday proposing a state match to federal dollars to help kick our Wall Street dependency and invest in the industries of the future. Tell us what you're proposing.
Well, we actually have already started to give whatever the federal stimulus or federal competitive bid money is for projects in the energy field. We started to give 10% of state dollars to add to it. And because of that, we have been winning all of the competitive bids, or many of the competitive bids, with respect to research and development on issues of energy, medical scientific research, and other health research. And we, right now, have received half of the grants for the advanced battery technology, which would power the hybrid electronic vehicles. It would make them viable. Whoever perfects energy storage technology, and the use of sodium is now apparently the element that helps to store the power of a battery, where lithium provides the power. If we are able to do that, we will replenish our economy from years to come. The basic idea is that we are converting our economy from auto parts manufacturing and other industrial manufacturing, relying on Wall Street and other financial services, to clean and renewable energy sources, to medical and scientific research, to biotech, to pharmaceutical medical development, and a number of areas that other states did not get a head start on, and which may actually put New York in the same place that it put manufacturing did for us in the 19th century, because obviously we have lost a lot of revenues and a lot of jobs as the industries have failed, and also as the stock market has plummeted, and now there may not be any derivatives trading for 10 or 15 years. So we're going to have to find alternative sources. And I did give the economic speech at the National Academy of Sciences on Monday, and thank you for mentioning it, because it all got lost in this distraction.
Well, it's the future of New York. And the question, I guess, is can government really be the engine that brings high-tech industries to the state?
Well, high-tech industries have found that the workforce were skilled in a lot of the manufacturing industries are perfect to be retrained for the new new types of jobs. What government has to do more than that, Brian, is to keep up with the times. For instance, when we got here, we realized that our Department of Labor does not have the categories of the new emerging innovation jobs, and so we are making that conversion, so that government can be a partner in the collaboration. And what I think is fascinating is that the colleges and universities, New York imports more students to colleges and universities than any other state, and also the big companies like General Electric and are collaborating far more than they would have 20 years ago, because everyone has figured out that we're not competing with other states as much as we're competing with other countries. And America is not going to get back to the world leadership in technology unless we regularly have ways in which we can monitor the new innovations and the new discoveries.
And you mentioned the students. A friend of mine was at your commencement address at Bard last month, where you talked about your economic plan and urged graduates to stay in New York. Do you think we have a brain drain?
Oh, totally. 28% of college graduates are leaving New York, Brian. And there was a time when people were coming to this state because it offered all the great new opportunities. When I became governor, a number of people I hadn't talked to since I was in high school called me. And I realized they were living in Nevada and New Mexico and California and other states where the quality of life is better, the property taxes are lower.
So how do we get them to stay?
Well, we get them to stay because right now the whole country is in recession. 44 states are in deficit, and the new job creation and the new high-tech companies are coming to New York. Global Foundries, which is a worldwide a computer chip developer that will bring us the next generation of computer chips, is investing $4.5 billion in the capital region in Tech Valley to conduct research and development, and will probably yield over 50,000 jobs of this state. Clean and renewable energy sources, solar and wind power development, it's not as efficient as it can be if we develop it, will yield another 50,000 jobs. And people will come here to be part of the sort of renaissance in technology and entrepreneurship and innovation.
Let's hope. Governor, I appreciate you staying over time. One final question. Our next segment will be about one piece of legislation that hangs in the balance with the mess in Albany, the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, to guarantee overtime pay, sick time, and other basic protections that other workers get for people whose workplace is other people's homes. Are you familiar with it, and do you support it?
If you read back in the 30s, the reason that these workers and farm workers did not receive those equal benefits is because the Southern senators wouldn't vote for it. It really began with the racism of the mid-20th century. Clearly, in the law, these workers deserve equal rights, and if they're able to pass the bill, or if they're able to get the legislature to even come back, I will sign it.
Governor Patterson, go kick some something up there and get them back to work, okay?
Well, I just would tell you right now, regardless of a court case, they need to come in and elect whoever the leader is, and Republican or Democrat, I will work with them, and we will get something done if I have to keep them here over time. And when they start realizing they're going to spend their summers with me rather than who they thought they were going to spend their summers with, maybe we'll have some action. And it's unfortunate that the assembly members who are conducting business correctly are going to have to make the sacrifice as well.
Governor David Patterson, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.